Noon. This is the Historic Landmarks Commission meeting for August 10th, 2020. Please note the commission hearing room at 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, room 2500B, is closed to the public due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Under Portland City Code and state law, the Landmarks Commission is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the commission are attending remotely by video and teleconference. Through required public notice, the public is invited to also participate remotely and can provide testimony during today's hearing. The commission is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote social distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff.
Hi, Hillary Adam.
Laura Duvall, Harrington Clerk.
Thanks, Laura. Brian.
Oh, sorry.
Brian Tierney.
Great. The members of the commission here today, maybe I'm just going to go ahead and name you off so you don't have to figure out who speaks next. Let's see, we have Maya Fodi, Matthew Roman, Andrew Smith, Annie Mahoney, Derek Spears, I believe. Do we have Derek?
He won't be coming today.
And neither. Oh, okay. And take that back.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Meyer called out today too.
Okay. Thank you. So, and then the last one is me, Kristen Miner. The members of the commission, commission members, that is, are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction in historic districts or remodeling of historic structures. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record and it is subject to rebuttal. Okay, for our agenda today, we are starting with some items of interest, which might take a little longer, I believe, than the 5 minutes that we had scheduled. So just for folks waiting for the first land use item, it'll be a type 3 procedure, and we're unfortunately going to try to get through our items of interest as fast as we can. Hillary, I'll turn it to you to start some items of interest discussion.
Sure. I'm hearing some feedback. Okay. I have a couple of things, and then Brandon and Spencer Hartle is going to talk about the proposed rule changes. I think he is here. I'm not seeing him yet, but
he's supposed to join us.
Yeah. Maybe he's registering. So the first one is, I received an email from Tracy Schwartz. She's from, sorry, I lost the email because I had to sign out. But she is from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and she was asking if the Landmarks Commission wanted to be a consulting party on some improvements to the levee system, sort of over by the Columbia, by the, I think it's called the Great Heron or the Heron Lakes Golf Course around there. And there's a levee system that expands pretty far. So that's like the historic Vanport area. And she was asking if anybody wants to be a part of that consulting party. I know that there would be at least one meeting in late August or early September. And I think it's fairly simple. I think it, I looked at the information last week and I believe it's tree removal and perhaps some increase in the height of the levee. So I don't know if anybody wants to participate in that. I could provide her pretty quick comments on your behalf, or one of you could attend that meeting and provide comments on behalf of the Landmarks Commission and report back. So, is anybody interested in that?
I probably would decline. I feel, unless there's anything already listed, but doesn't sound like there is, there's just potential. Okay. Anybody interested in doing that? I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand, so.
Okay. Well, then I'll discuss internally as to whether BDS wants to provide any comments.
Okay. Thanks, Hillary.
Thank you. I get those requests every once in a while, so try to flag them.
Great.
Second, there was a question about monuments around town and what their status is, particularly with what we see going on with nationally, but also locally, in terms of people taking down monuments on their own. And then here with the case of the Thompson Elk Fountain Rack, remove that fountain after some damage. And I believe it's Portland Water Bureau that technically owns that fountain because it is a working fountain. My understanding is that some of the fires in that fountain weaken the stability of the stone and also damage some of the piping. And so the fountain, the elk was first removed to protect it so that it wouldn't accidentally topple over due to the weakness of the stone. And then the base was ultimately removed because it had suffered some damage and also as a means to protect it. That elk is not the subject of any ire of from the public, as far as I know. And so I believe RAC's intent and the Water Bureau's intent is to keep it safe for now and ultimately put it back, hopefully in that same place. RAC is putting together some recommendations to OMF, which is the Office of Management and Finance, on what they should do with some monuments in town, some that do have some questionable associations, and others that they're further investigating. I don't think that there's a formal recommendation yet. I believe that, I could be wrong about this, but I think that the only monument that is subject to or would be subject to a demolition review as part of it being a contributing resource to a historic district is the Harvey Scott Fountain or Harvey Scott statue at Mount Tabor. If you want to know a little bit of the history about that, I can sort of explain it. But and then the others are either HRI listed resources or local landmarks. The Thompson Elk was a local landmark. It's a local landmark. So there is a process if any of those are going to be permanently removed. As I said, with the Thompson Elk, the intent is that it's temporary just to protect it. Do you guys have any questions?
I have a quick question, Hillary. Is do we have a lot of documentation on the base and all the, I mean, do we have drawings of exactly what was there or do we know?
I don't know. I could ask about that.
I don't want to add, I'm just curious. I guess, and I may have contributed to this being on the agenda today, but I just wanted to reach out and make sure that the Landmarks Commission is, you know, engaging mm-hmm. our fellow volunteers and community leaders to help, you know, guide the discussion about what's appropriate. Because certainly I don't want to defend any inappropriate sculptures, but I also don't want to just, you know, it's almost like we've talked about in a seismic event where the thing just gets scraped off the earth before anyone even knows what was there. And there are other public art sculptures. And I think it's a matter of engaging with the public to say that these are things that are for everyone. These are public pieces of art. They're really for all citizens of all classes, of all races, all genders, you know, everything. So I really appreciated that Pioneer Courthouse sent us a letter letting us know what they were going to do. And I'm just hoping that we can engage with whether it's RAC or our, our city bureaus, just to be there to help, to be what we're, you know, our oath is to try to protect some of this stuff. And again, not the inappropriate stuff, but I just hope we have a HABS or some kind of a survey document that kind of shows what, and I saw it looked like it was Pioneer waterproofing trucks on the scene, which I think was at least, and they looked like they were palleting the pieces up, but sometimes those things go off to storage and then they disappear and you never see them again. So anyway, thank you for following up on it. I hope we can be a positive voice for public civic art, not just going away forever.
Yeah. FYI, really quickly, Hillary, I've been watching these various webinars about what other, you know, and it's through APT, the National Trust on, you know, what different jurisdictions are doing to address these sort of monuments. And it's interesting, a lot of them, what they do is they sort of appoint like a task force to do like a case by case basis, which would be great if Portland did something similar. And in that case, we could be part of that, you know what I mean? Part of this discussion, which needs to look at all the various facets of it. So that would be really great. And I have like every week, there's a new webinar that comes out and a lot of them are recorded. I'm happy to compile the list because it has some really rich, very rich discussion topics by a lot of community leaders, people in the conservation community. And I'm happy to do that because they've been absolutely fascinating. I haven't seen every one, but I know they're recorded, so.
That would be good. You can forward that to me and I can add that list to the library.
Okay, I will do that.
Can I say one last thing? I think a lot of the statues, and you mentioned, you know, there are some that are inappropriate, and I think there's something said when a community decides collectively to take those down. So even the ones that have been taken down, I think we should, if they were monuments but inappropriate, then, you know, let's have the process to formally take them away and make it a civic gesture on all of our parts, not just, you know, a few people deciding which ones were appropriate and which ones weren't. So I think that would be a more meaningful statement that the community could make. So that's all I want to say. Sorry to go on and on.
No. Both Brandon and I have been in touch with RAC. They've reached out to each of us to initiate those conversations. And I know that their intent is to have a robust public conversation about which ones should stay and which ones should definitely go. If somebody wants to be a point person, if they created some kind of task force and wanted a member of the Landmarks Commission, I can put them in touch with a specific person, or potentially we could invite them also to have a briefing, just to have a sort of one-on-one conversation. But I know that their intent is to have a broad public conversation about this. They're like, right now they're just at the sort of the beginning phases on moving forward and trying to establish a plan, essentially.
Well, we have Commissioner Mahoney on as our, I think, as our rep on RAC still. So I don't know, maybe she's willing to engage with them a little bit. I'm willing to engage with them a little bit, or just write a letter and offer our willingness to help. I don't know, something to just engage them so that they, that we remain relevant in the conversation.
That's great. Thank you.
Do you guys want to write a letter?
Why don't you reach out first, Hillary, and just kind of see if this task force is going to be happening soon? And if it seems like it's still quite a ways out, then maybe we go ahead and write a letter. But I feel like participating in the task force would be a great, you know, thing for one of us to be a member on there.
Okay. I'll do that.
And I'm willing to help draft a letter when it comes to that.
Okay. Thank you.
I can turn it over to Brandon now to talk about the National Register rule changes.
Great.
Hi, everybody. So, Brandon Spencer Hartle, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and today I'm just doing a quick overview of proposed changes to state administrative rule that have been proposed by the Oregon Department of Parks and Recreation, and for which are out to the public for review and comment. And so I'm going to spend a couple minutes just giving just a quick overview of the proposed rule changes, and then talk briefly about the role of city staff in responding to these rules and what we know about the sort of commission's best practice on how to engage with the proposal on the table. I will say up front that the State Historic Preservation Office is asking for all comment to be received by August 31st at 5 p.m. So we've got a couple of weeks before comments are due, but not a whole lot of time for coordination and discussion here. And so today I'm going to be pretty brief, but also look to commission members and probably Chair Minor to help us figure out exactly what is of the greatest interest to the commission and where the concerns and support lie. As a matter of quick background, the proposed administrative rules are on the SHPO website. And I will just read here briefly from the introduction for what the purpose of the proposed rules are, just to give the official sort of SHPO perspective on where they're coming from, and then embellish a little bit from where we understand these rules are going. So the stated need for the rule is that over the last several years, several proponents have nominated high-profile controversial properties to the Federal National Register of Historic Places in Oregon. These projects expose discrepancies between the federal and state laws and rules that govern the National Register program and identify gaps in administrative processes. Especially controversial has been counting property owners' objections to establish owner consent as required by the federal rule, specifically trusts, but also other ownership arrangements as well. The result of uncertainty is costly substantive processes, delays, and legal proceedings. Revisions to the state rules guiding the procedures and responsibilities of SHPO staff and the State Advisory Committee on Historic Preservation for listing in the National Register of Historic Places is necessary to align federal and state processes and procedures. So essentially what's happened the last couple of years is as a result of a number of nominations, principally the Eastmoreland Historic District nomination and the Pilot Butte Canal nomination in Central Oregon, but also some less controversial nominations, the SHPO has identified areas that the federal code of regulations either doesn't provide guidance or provides discretionary guidance to states and local governments and how the National Register program would be administered in accordance with those federal rules. And these break down to things like I mentioned a minute ago in the preamble, how trusts are considered as owner entities for nominating resources that have multiple owners, considering the role of the local government in reviewing and commenting on proposed National Register nominations, considering when and how public notice is provided to property owners when a resource is nominated to the National Register, considering when and how drafts of the National Register nomination are shared with the broad public, with the CLG, with nominators throughout the nomination process, and really getting clarity on the roles of every level of government, ranging from the broad public, the Historic Landmarks Commission were present, city council, city staff, state advisory committee, and on up. And so what the SHPO has proposed is a pretty significant a rewrite of all the rules that pertain to National Register designation in Oregon. As part of that, they've added clarity where clarity is necessary. Some of those areas are relatively benign. In other areas, the SHPO is working within some pretty tight Code of Federal Regulation language that doesn't give us a lot of state flexibility in how we might interpret the rules. In other areas, they've found some flexibility to clarify, and I'll use one example, clarify that there's time in the process for an as amended version of all nominations to be shared with the public when SHPO sends a nomination to the Park Service. So to give a use this as an example, today I'll pick on the Postal Employees Credit Union building. You saw that nomination come through a few months ago, made some comments on it and how that nomination might be approved. Generally, the certified local government, city staff, the public never see that nomination again unless there's a public records request to ask for it. These proposed rules state that when a nomination is forwarded from SHPO to the National Park Service for final consideration, that as amended nomination will be made public so that there's another opportunity to see how or if changes that were requested were made. And if those changes were made or not, the public, the maybe property owners, interested parties could then send feedback to the National Park Service to supplement those changes. So it provides another checkpoint in the process. Not a big policy change, but something that'll help with administration. And for properties that are publicly owned or who have multiple owners, seeing that final version of the nomination might be a critical piece in knowing whether an objection is appropriate or not. There are a couple of pretty significant pieces of these rule changes that are likely to gain attention, not just from this Landmarks Commission, but Landmarks Commissions around the state. Those have to do with the timing, the sort of sequencing of when a commission considers a nomination, and more specifically, what role the commission plays in potentially rejecting or pausing a nomination from moving forward, and what role the local elected body plays in pausing or rejecting a nomination to move forward. And so in these proposed rules, you'll see that the chief elected official for a local government does not have a veto power over a commission's recommendation. But if you dig deep, you'll see in comments that have been submitted on these rules, a dialogue about what role, if any, the city council or the chief elected official should play in having an eye on nominations that move through the process, especially those nominations that may be more controversial. Like I said, I'm just gonna do just a quick orientation to these rules. City staff have identified several areas where there's concern about the rule, but I'll say that in conversations internally, there's a general level of support among city staff around the clarity and the increased sort of procedural checkpoints that have been identified in the proposed rules. There's a feeling that with many of these rules, the ambiguities or the sort of stumbling blocks that we run into today around mail notice, around seeing that as amended version of the nomination, that those things will be cleared up with a new rule. But staff have identified a few areas of concern in the rule. One has to do with a situation where owners object to a nomination, whether it's a publicly owned resource or a large district, and the amount of time that the local government, the CLG, the city council, the public at large, can have a dialogue around that nomination when there are one or more objecting owners. Another has to do with specifically publicly owned properties and how a nomination and a management strategy for the property may or may not speak to each other. This is a concern that is shared with our Parks Bureau about how some previous listings in the National Register may best align with management strategy or how comments that were received pertain to the boundary or contributing resources get incorporated into the process. So there's a couple of comments that staff have raised. There's also some sort of the larger issue, the elephants in the room, about the connection between the National Register and land use regulations in the state of Oregon. That's not something that this rulemaking exercise is intended to reconsider or address, but that is something that maybe many people are commenting on because there is a direct relationship there. And also an interest in city staff to talk about how the National Park Service considers racial justice when they evaluate nominations that come through their door and what guidance they're providing cities and bulletins. Outside of this rulemaking effort, but something that's come up in the conversations and testimony that may be a related interest that might get flagged in a letter. What I can say, and I'm looking over the side because we just got some more guidance from our Office of Government Relations as I've been talking to you. What we've been advised is to ask the Landmarks Commission to to discuss these proposed rules, to identify areas where the commission may support or object to the proposed rules, and to either testify as individuals straight to the State Historic Preservation Office, or in the guidance we just received, is to relay those concerns to staff in hopes that we can address those in a city letter that shows the diversity of concerns or thoughts around the proposed rules and where the city as one entity may go with our recommendation. So that's the most recent guidance we got from the Office of Government Relations, was that the Landmarks Commission be asked not to send a letter directly from the commission to State Historic Preservation Office about the rules, but to work with city staff, Hillary, myself, on incorporating your concerns and feedback into one City of Portland letter. And with that, I'm gonna pause. I haven't read this whole email that just came in from the Government Relations Office, but I think that sums it up. We could talk in detail about the specific line items in the proposed rules. I am not familiar with the entirety of it line by line, but I'm more than happy to be resourced if commission members wanna dig deeper into it.
Thank you very much, Brendan. I think everyone was kind of waiting for you to give us a little lowdown. I've definitely tried to wrap my head around the rule changes because Maya and I said that we would be responsible for writing a letter, and we started one, but you know, we got kind of bogged down, and so I'm glad that we have more time to respond. I'm happy to, you know, still be a part of that team, sort of feeding our, you know, collective response on to whoever is going to be in charge of, you know, making sure that, you know, we are heard as a commission, even if it's within a larger letter. You know, that sounds fine to me. And I guess I would just highlight a couple of things in the rules right now that I wanted to, you know, to hear from anybody about, or just that I think, you know, that I particularly noticed. One of them is the regulation that says that landmarks commissions really are kind of the last word in terms of objecting to a new nomination. And as you know, we don't really have, you know, we're not ever in a position of saying yes or no. All we do is give recommendations to the SATP, you know, so it's more as a recommending body. But I think right now, if the local government is objecting, so in other words, you know, if city council wanted to object to any new nomination, if we didn't also object, then you know, the nomination would go ahead and get forwarded to the SHPO, and they could, you know, decide whether to forward that on again. And I know that there are some who do believe strongly that the city, you know, the elected officials should have the last word. And I guess there are two things I want to say about that. One is that for an individual, you know, nominated structure, there's always the type four. So, you know, if it's something like the Memorial Coliseum, you know, that's city owned, or even if it's not city owned for some reason and they object, there's still a way that that structure can go through a city process and be demolished if necessary. I mean, there are certainly, we have regulations about that. But the thing that is not really covered are historic, right? So like you can't really, you know, destroy or, you know, tear down a historic district. I mean, I guess in some sense you could, but, and so I feel like the voices out there who are really objecting to new historic districts, we've been hearing a lot about this in the last 5 years. You know, there are those who really believe that there are no reason, you know, there's sort of no good reason to list a new National Register district. And regardless of your, you know, of your feelings, I guess, about districts that have a race in the past, I mean, a lot of Portland does, but, you know, we're not really hearing very much about sustainability, for one thing. So you know, it's my viewpoint that we should push back on that and, you know, and go ahead and say, there's, you know, there's still density that can happen. We've said this before, you know, let's go ahead and include that in our letter that we do believe that, that individual houses are not in themselves racist. So I think that that's an important component of supporting larger historic districts is that, you know, we're at least preserving those individual houses, and those can change and grow, but I guess that's all I wanted to highlight right now. Maya, did you have anything to add? You were, I don't know if you had a chance to really get into the rules yet.
No, and I also haven't had a chance to read the letter by the 1,000 pages of and what we should comment on and what's outside of our comment would be nice to comment. So to be honest, I'm here, I'm planning to review it carefully, but it was more of a, wasn't a quick skim read. You sort of have to really look at it. But I'm again, totally willing to help out in any way.
Okay. Does anyone else want to make any comments about, you know, what Brandon just presented, or if you've had a chance to read the rules, you know, on your own?
I think one thing I'll just add on top of that, I probably should have said this before, there were a few items early in the process that BPS flagged for SHPO that were priorities in a procedural sense. And one of those I didn't mention or didn't highlight enough was the mailed notice piece that in the past had been incumbent on city staff to fire off a mailed notice to property owners to prepare a second property owner list. And there have been some gaps that have come up in that process. And so one, you know, a small item, but something that was important to us was that the SHPO take on the responsibility for mailed notice, and that is included in the rule. And so while the rule is overwhelming in terms of the if you look at the sort of track change version, there's a lot. Some of those items are just small requests from local governments to make the process work smoother that have no, like the outcome will be the same, but that we've tied loose ends.
Great. Yeah, and I totally agree that there should be, you know, more of a responsibility from SHPO's end on mailed notice. I also believe that there are objections to a nomination that nomination should probably get more time for consideration, you know, for the parties to kind of work that out before it gets, you know, on its normal track and forwarded to SHPO and then on to NPS.
And this is just my perspective is, and I've seen these come up over the years, there are times where there's a nomination that's before your commission that you don't have the time to press pause in the SHPO timeline. And I've seen this come up primarily with district, but some occasionally with the individual properties where your commission having more time to sleep on it, to ask for an applicant to come back or a nominator to come back with some changes to meet you where you're at could have been a helpful way to secure not just a better document, but to look for an outcome that may be a better one or to give you the information you need to make a decision about recommending or not.
I guess this, Commissioner Mahoney, the one thing with that would be, I mean, does that make it a more onerous process for people to nominate? And do we want to try to balance, right? Making it, you know, efficient and fairly clear process versus, you know, covering ourselves, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I have not read through them. I don't have any comments, but I support whatever Chair Minor and Commissioner Foti come up with, or support their effort in that.
Okay. Any last questions for Brandon or? Nope. Great. Brandon, thank you so much for coming in front of us. And nice
I,
to
I wish
meet.
Yeah, you too. I wish I had a better presentation today. It was all sort of last minute that we came today. So happy to work as, you know, with the subcommittee or with you, Chair Minor, on where we're going. And like I said, August 31st, so I think we'll be looking for the commission's main points so that we can figure out how to integrate those best into a city letter, what we need to do.
For sure.
Thanks. Okay.
Great. Hillary, do we have any last things on items of interest now that we've taken up a little more time than?
I don't have anything.
Okay, very good. Then.